What's going on, everybody? Nate here. We have another episode for you today. This one was done with Chris Reinhold, formerly Chris Robinson. We talk about his career since the Moscone Cup, as well as all of the things that have happened since and why he changed his last name. So like I said, he was formerly Chris Robinson. He's now Chris Reinhold. So we go through all of the discussion as to all of the reasons why that took place. But before we jump into that, I wanted to get a shout out to the newest Patreons of the podcast, Michael Pattisil. Hopefully that's pronounced right. Michael Pattisil, Steven Dubas. And lastly, we have ourselves a newest super supporter. So if you're not familiar with the Patreon or you've never checked out the tiers, this is the highest tier that you can actually be on. This tier comes with a lot of pretty awesome perks, and I'm pretty excited to get to meet Michael Fedek. And hopefully we're going to be able to get you on a podcast coming up so that you can actually be on with your favorite player. So if you're on Facebook, please reach out to me and add me as a friend, Nate Mindham. And we will coordinate with that and see if we can get you on a podcast going in the future so that you can ask some questions to your favorite player. That is one of the perks of being that tier. And on top of that, you'll get all of your other gear and perks that you get from being that level of support. But ultimately, I want to give my sincerest thank you for supporting the future of this podcast and believing in us enough that you would want to take that step on. So thank you very much to Michael Fedek, as well as Steven Dubas and Michael Pattisil. So appreciate all three of you. And with that out of the way, let's jump right into the podcast for today.
I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
What's going on, everybody? We have, I want to say, is this the third time you've been on the podcast? Am I right in saying that?
Second or third.
It's at least the third, I think.
At least once.
This is at least the first time that you've been on the podcast. And if you cannot recognize that silky smooth voice, we are joined today by Chris Robinson. Hello, Chris.
How's it going? It's Chris Reinhold.
Well, I wanted to lead into that. I was going to start saying, just kidding. It's not Chris. It's Chris Robinson. It's Chris Reinhold. And that's why we're here today. You you butchered it for me. Oh, now we're going to have to start over. Just kidding. So we're going to get to that. That is the reason we have you on today. But I wanted to start it with the last time you were on the podcast, you were... I guess I want to say it was right before your Moscone Cup appearance, and we were discussing kind of where your career was at. So let's start with the Moscone Cup. You were kind of the only bright spot. I mean, Shane played okay. He played, you know, Shane Speedy. He plays about, I guess for Shane, it's about as bad as you can still play. I mean, he still played great because he's Shane Van Boning. But besides Shane, I mean, you were really what the U.S.'s only bright spot as far as in London and putting out there in that tournament. So why don't you take us through what you thought of the Moscone Cup and what it was like to be on that stage for the first time?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that, you know, I mean, obviously we all played a part in our loss and I did too, not winning that match, opening match against Kachi. But, you know, I think, it was kind of surreal to me because, you know, ever since I've been playing pool, so I was 14 or 15, I've been watching the Moscone Cup and rooting for USA. And I was kind of, I was doing that same thing. I was rooting for the USA and kind of just watching it. And then we were in the team match and then it was my turn to play the first rack. And that's when it finally hit me that I was actually, you know, playing the Moscone Cup. Because, you know, I mean, you get out there and it doesn't really... I mean, even when Jeremy called me and told me I made it, I mean, I really didn't, you know, it just didn't seem real until I was actually out there, which was kind of crazy. So I thought I played well, but I also thought that I definitely could have done better. And I'll be working really hard the rest of the year to hopefully get the opportunity again to go out there and compete with the team.
So without going, I guess, too in-depth with the personal conversation that you had with JJ, what was your reaction when you were when you got that phone call and was told you made the team?
Well, actually, I was California was closed down, so I actually drove out to Arizona and I stayed with my friend Evans and his wife and his kids, and this guy, Evans Bishop. The Bishops are really nice, you know. I stay out there and we just have fun and practice, and it's pretty awesome. So I went out to Arizona and Phoenix, and I was just practicing because all the California pool halls were closed, and the only real place I had to play was people's houses. And I mean, that's cool and it's a good option to have, and I'm very grateful that they're, you know, letting me practice. My friend Spencer Ladin, John Coya, you know, they're really cool of letting me practice at their house. I mean, it's opening up their house, someone is, you know, it's pretty personal. So I went out to Arizona so I could practice every day, and I was playing probably 4, 5, 6 hours a day at either Bull Shooters or Main Street Billiards or Colby's, and just kind of going around and making sure I was getting to my practice, because I knew there was a possibility of me making the team. And this was the first year that I actually figured out that I could make the team, because I felt like I actually did well in the tryouts, right? So I mean, up until this point, the past two years of me in the boot camps and all that stuff, you know, I did not play well, so I didn't feel like I had a chance to make it, you know. So I felt like I just left it all out there, and I played awesome at Jeremy's house. We went to do the little boot camp, and then I just felt like I had a chance, and you know, the intuition was there and my confidence was there, and I was playing every day, and I just I felt like I was in tune. So when he called, I think he texted me, Jeremy texted me and said, "Hey, can I talk to you?" And I was just like, okay, I'm getting pulled in the principal's office, and I'm gonna give a slap on the wrist and say, you know what, this is, you know, these are the reasons why I'm not picking you, but you have this upside, blah, blah, keep working, right? That's what I was expecting.
Yeah, keeping your Wheaties.
So then I'm driving. I'm like, okay, well, it's like midnight at in Arizona, and it's probably 2 a.m. where Jeremy's at in Texas. And, you know, he's probably been thinking about this way too long, and he just wanted to get over with. So I'm just like, all right, well, I'll just let him get out of the way. So I get in my car, I pack up my stuff, get in my car, and I'm like, all right, I'll call you in a second. So I called him and I said, "Hey Jeremy, what's up? How's it going?" And he's just like, "Hey man, you know, Jeremy's really chill and I'm kind of pretty chill too." So it was a weird way of telling me, because then it was like the most chill conversation ever, and it was kind of weird. So he calls me, and I answer and I say, "Hey Jeremy, what's up?" And then, he just goes, "Yeah, so, you know, I've been thinking a lot about who I'm going to pick and all that." And I'm just like, yeah, yeah. In my head, I'm just like, all right, just tell me I didn't make it and get over with, and I can go live my life.
Dragging it out.
So, so he goes, "Well, you know, I mean, you have this huge upside." And I'm like, oh, here it starts. Here it goes. And then he goes, "Well, I just wanted to call and let you know that I picked you for the 5th spot on the Moscone Cup team." And I just paused for about like 5 seconds, and I just said, "Are you serious?" Like, I didn't believe him. I thought he was pulling a prank on me or something, or I don't even know. But it didn't hit me for maybe until I made the announcement 2 weeks later. And me, I had to contain it for about 2 weeks. And, you know, I mean, part of me, even if they would tell that I could tell people, I probably wouldn't have told anybody, just because I want to make sure it happens first, you know, because I'm one of those people that I don't really want to get my hopes up for things that might not happen. You know, I just kind of, I don't like getting my hopes up too big. So I just wait until they announced it. But I had first people I told were my parents, and that's about it.
I remember, I don't know exactly when it was, but I remember texting you maybe a week and a half or something like that before they actually did the official announcement. And you wouldn't even, I mean, you kind of giggled for it, but like you wouldn't even tell me whether or not it was true. And I was,
oh yeah,
and I was telling you I already knew you were on the team, and you were like, oh, I don't know yet. We'll have to see. You know, it's like, it's all good, man. I know you're on the team. You don't have to lie to me. And you, so now I know it's not that you were, you know, trying to keep a secret. It was that you were still trying to maintain your hopes. I get it now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't like, I don't know. I will never tell someone something that I don't want to fall through on, but I've had a lot of people in the past that have, you know, not, that just haven't come through with things that they said they were going to do. So my, you know, I always made it a point that if I tell you that I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And, you know, it's just kind of, you're only a man of the only, you know, I mean, you're not, I think, being a man of your words, like one of the most important things in life.
Yeah. And that's definitely a good trait to have. So let's do you have any takeaways from the Moscone Cup? Anything that you learned that you could potentially, you know, teach others, or just kind of bring big takeaways that you left London with that, for that week?
I learned a lot from the aspect of, you know, playing, you know, better players and playing with Shane, practicing with Shane. And, you know, when it's kind of like that thing where, you know, Shane is obviously one of the best to ever do it. And, I think he gained a lot of respect for me because he saw that I was practicing as hard as he was, if not harder, and just putting in the time. Because I was there for, you know, whenever I wasn't asleep, I was practicing on the practice table. You know, whenever I wasn't eating or asleep, I was practicing. And, you know, I was taking it serious and really trying to do my best. And he, I think he sensed that also, which was kind of cool. And, you know, he started opening up to me and telling me, what shots to shoot, what's the better way. You know what I mean? Part of it is obviously because he wanted to win, and he wanted, and he knows that I'm a part of him winning if, you know, I had to play well for him to win and us to win. But, you know, just seeing that competitive drive he has, that just, you know, it's a lot different mindset to someone that's, you know, like me a year ago, kind of loosey-goosey, you know, whatever, you lost. And then him, it means everything to him, you know, and that's why he wins 5 U.S. Opens, and that's why he's won everything you could win just about. So that was cool. And just being with the team and, you know, just having that experience under my belt is huge. I really want to experience the Moscone Cup with a crowd. I feel like I would rise to the occasion. I felt like I played okay, but I also felt like I got really bored. And I felt like when I just don't know how to say this. I felt like when there's no crowd and it's boring and there's no noise, it's just dead silent, like that's so boring to me. I a lot of times I lost focus, or I don't know. It's a whole different atmosphere when I feel like there's more pressure when it's dead quiet than when there's people trying to scream at you or say something, your back's thrown, stroke. Like that's I kind of like those kind of matches.
And I know that Jim Telfer is sitting in his house right now listening to this podcast and just like licking his lips at the opportunity to just rip into you the first time he can now in Europe. It's going to be, oh, yeah. You're going to be in trouble.
I hope to hear him there.
No, I obviously you've been to the Moscone Cup plenty of times, so you know what that atmosphere can be like. You know how, what's the best way to put it? How ruckus, we'll say, it can be. And the fact that you're ready for it, I mean, that's, we've seen a lot of players in the U.S. that have really, you know, a lot of really talented players that have just completely been shying away from that stage for a lot of years now, and we can see it every year when the Moscone Cup comes that they just can't handle the crowd. So I hope that you can handle it. We obviously we need the presence going future, presence going into the future on the Moscone Cup team. So I think you can do it. I'm excited for it. So let's move on from the Moscone Cup and let's move into your career since. So Of course, you did have the big gambling match with, I'm not sure how much was actually on the line. That was kind of hush-hush, but I think I know what it was. But it wasn't a huge amount between you and Danny Olsen. But you guys did have a little bit on the line, and that one didn't go exceptionally your way. Was there anything that you took from that match that you have applied to your game since?
It's kind of funny because I do not know why I would agree to play such a long race with someone that has, I don't know. I mean, I knew my 10 ball break was not good going into that, and I still wanted to go play because the competitive spirit, I guess. But after that match, I really, really only practiced my 10 ball break for the next 3 months. Like, I've literally only. So when I moved to Texas, which we'll talk about in a little bit, the first 2 weeks I was here, I practiced my break about 80 hours in the first 2 weeks, just 10 ball.
Wow.
Because I really needed, you know, I mean, like, I mean, I feel like I play higher than my Fargo, but my break doesn't allow me. My break is way below my Fargo. You know what I mean? Like, my break's like a 680, but I play like a 7-60, maybe higher.
I feel attacked right now, just so you know.
What?
I feel attacked.
Are you a 680?
Yeah, pretty much. I feel attacked. I'm just kidding.
Well, you probably have a better break than me at that time, so, I mean, you're doing something.
I'm just picking on you.
But, I mean, it was the second verification that I needed. It was the last verification that I needed, that rotation pull was literally just a break. And, you know, I felt like I broke worse than I did when I played Tyler that huge match, that huge race to 100. And, you know, it's just when you're up so many games in a race to 100 and you're breaking, making a ball, getting a shot, another guy can't even make a ball in the break to save his life. It's just like no one's going to come back on you. No one's going to, you know, if anything, it made me just realize that the break is everything. And, you know, it's not, I mean, hats off to Danny. He's a good ambassador for the sport. He's a really good player. But, you know, I just felt like if we broke equal, it would be a way different game. But, I just needed to up my, I just needed to get better. And that's all it is, really. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I think expanding on that a little bit more. As somebody who doesn't quite play at your guys' level, of course, I'm a couple notches down. But even playing pretty much at any stage of your, if you can run racks, any stage of your career, playing against somebody who's constantly making balls and running out and putting you in your seat and chilling you out for 2, 3, 4, 5 games, and then you're expected to come up to the table and be able to do the same thing back. When your break isn't working, and your break was not working, you were not making balls, you were not controlling the one ball. It's really hard to continue to maintain a game when your opponent is breaking, running 2 to 3 every time, and you're barely getting to the table with opportunities. And when you do get opportunities, your break just lets you down right away afterwards. It's almost like cruel and unusual punishment to have to play a match like that.
It's like this. It's like Danny had a, like, you know, blowing up balloons, right? He had this pump that blew up a balloon real quick, and he could tie it, and then he could do another one. And then I had to manually blow mine up with my mouth, and then I had to, and then once it was already blown up, someone went over and popped it. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
like it's just, I don't know if that's kind of a weird analogy, but what I'm saying is, like, it's just, especially in that long of a race, if you're down like 20 games, you know, I got it back to like 10, I think, at one point, but then I couldn't break, so it didn't matter, you know. It's like it just it was not gonna work.
Yep.
And you know, it's just, I don't know, it was almost more funny to me at that point, because it just, I mean, it wasn't funny because I don't like to lose, but I mean, it was almost comical as far as me sitting in my chair and really, you know, just realizing that, you know, it's all the break. So
yeah. Sometimes you laugh to keep from crying. That's a real thing. So tell us about the practice you've been having on your break. So you said 80 hours. Is that like break rack work? Are you racking the balls and breaking them and just kind of controlling the rock and just trying to work on the breaking motion? Or are you actually working on different aspects of the break?
I've basically worked on everything. I got my timing down. I know exactly what I do every time I break now, which is way, way big. It's humongous as far as, confidence, because you know what, if something doesn't go right, you know what to change. And I never used to know what to do. You know, I just tried to smack them and hopefully that, you know, balls would go in and I get a shot. But, now I know how to, hit them softer. I know how to, control my bridge length. I know how to, you know what I mean? Like the, elevation of the elevation of your bridge hand, the elevation of your backhand, where I gripped a cue, like literally everything. I took everything into consideration, and now it's not a crutch anymore, which is, you know, huge. So,
So if complete hypothetical, if you ran it back with Danny right now, do you feel like your break is at a spot now where you can compete with his and potentially win the match, or at least, you know, put a real good match in there?
Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, I don't feel the need to do any races to 100 right now. I mean, I would much rather do maybe races to 11, 13, you know, something where, no matter what, you're in striking distance, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the other person, there's always pressure on the other person, because I don't like when they, you know what I mean, that they get 10 games ahead, they're basically free rolling. So yeah. I'd rather do something like that where it's shorter races, just because, it's just a little more pressure, and if, you know, it's easier to, you just play another set, and it's not like you're stuck 70 to 40, and even you haven't made a ball in the break since your last match, you know what I mean?
And I don't want to speak for you, so forgive me if I'm overstepping my bounds here, but you don't strike me at the end of the, I mean, if you had to, if you were asked if you could only gamble for the rest of your life or only play tournaments for the rest of your life, you wouldn't even hesitate in saying tournament. You've always struck me more as a tournament player than a gambler anyways, right?
Well, actually, that's funny, because when I first started playing and getting better, I was only really gambling. I didn't really do much else. So, I mean, I was going to Derby. When I was at Lindenwood, I'd go to Derby, I'd gamble with everybody, and I was getting better that way. But I had a lot more games, too. You know, they were easier games. So it was more just stealing money at that point. But now I have games that I have to play my best to win, and I have to break better than I break to win. And that's, you know, not going to happen. But I don't have the drive to gamble anymore. I mean, I'm thankful that I have these sponsors that help me out and make it to where I don't have to struggle anymore, but part of that struggle was me gambling and doing all that stuff. And, you know, I just don't enjoy it anymore. And I think that's why, another part of the reason why, I have no desire to play these gambling matches. And, if it's like backroom gambling and stuff like that, that's cool, but it's a whole different animal when it's streamed and all that. I don't know. It's something mentally where if I'm being streamed when I'm gambling, it's just, I feel like I'm on their time and it's not about my match. It's about the stream, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So I'm more or less just, I don't mind gambling. I think there's a time and a place for it, but right now, you know, I'm trying to win tournaments and, I'm trying to do my best in tournaments. And I think the gambling side of it has taken away a little bit on my tournament side. So I have to, I'm more worried about the image of pool. And I think tournaments and doing all that is better for it than, you know, arguing over gambling matches. And especially because we need the USA players to be a little more, more of a brotherhood and, you know, a sisterhood. What, you know, all the USA players should be close. And, you know, instead a lot of them are, you know, barking at each other and down each other's necks for no reason, and everyone, you know, it's just kind of, there's some drama involved in it that I don't like. And if I think that there's going to be any of that involved or too much ego, I just won't gamble with anyone in general. So
yeah. I think that's well said. All right, so let's talk about your move to Texas, because you just moved to Texas, I want to say about 5 weeks ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah, I moved to Texas end of February, so that was
Oh, was it that long ago?
3.5 months, almost 4 months.
Where does the time go? So why don't you talk about what brought you to Texas and what you're doing while you're there?
I'm a house pro at Sticks and Stones Billiards in Lewisville, Texas. That's ran by Anju and John Bergman. And, you know, they're married and it's, you know, they own this pool room, Sticks and Stones, and they're doing a lot of great things for pool in, the Dallas area. And they're really cool people. We get along really well. I give lessons there. They have a junior league. They have a lot of tournaments. They have really good food. I mean, when we went there for Moscone Cup, we were doing an exhibition match there, and I really love the pool room. They have all diamonds. They have five 9 foot diamonds, and they have 12 diamond bar boxes. It's really nice. Everything's top notch, and you know, I just felt like I felt like I could call it my home. So, I practice there every day when I'm in town or I'm not at a tournament. I practice there every day. And, it's a huge pool community in Texas, and, everyone's friendly, and it's just an awesome place to be.
So did you approach them or did they approach you as far as, getting you in there as the house pro?
So it's kind of funny. I put a Facebook post out saying I would like to be a house pro somewhere, and I was overwhelmed with the response because I got about 42 responses from pool rooms across the country saying that they would, you know, free pool time, free all this crazy stuff, right? And it kind of baffled me because I've never had that much support, you know, outside my parents and a few friends from the pool industry, right? And I think, you know, a lot of it had to do with the Moscone Cup, me being on the team, but I'd like to think a lot of it has to do with my character and integrity for the sport, and I think that helped a lot too. But I was overwhelmed by the response, and when I was going through all of the options, it was, you know, my instincts always kept telling me to go with Sticks and Stones because they make whenever you walk in, they make you feel like family. And I had so many offers, but a lot of them either I've never been to or it isn't good location for pool. I'll be on the other side of the country where, you know, I mean, it's I'd have to travel so far for everything. But, you know, Texas is kind of a good in the middle spot where it's not too far away from anything, which is really awesome. So, I'm just fortunate to be in the situation, and I'm trying to give back to them more than they give to me, which is what every sponsored player, that's what you should do for your sponsors, because, you know, that's how they stick around, and that's how anything works, you know what I mean? So that's how pool will eventually get bigger, is if we give back to the sponsors more than they give back to us for now, and then eventually it'll all even out.
We could only hope so, at least.
Well, I mean, we gotta start doing it first. That's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, I agree. So tell us about the lessons that you're doing out of there, and if anybody in the Dallas area is a listener to this podcast is interested in those, how would they go about getting those?
Yeah, so I charge $100 an hour or $150 for 2 hours. But the thing is, when you get a lesson from me, you know, we exchange contact information, and I give you a drill to do at the end, and whenever you have any questions, you can text me, call me, message me, do whatever you'd like, and we'll figure out what's going on. And I try to make it a little more personal than just I'm here to take your money. You know, that's not really what I'm there for. If that was it, I'd be hustling someone somewhere, you know. that's not my goal. But the reason why I charge what I charge is because if I charge not enough, I'll have a lot of people that don't really want the lesson. They just kind of want to say they got one, and that's not the clientele that I'm looking for. I'm looking for the people that want to get better, and they want to improve their game. They're really dedicated about it. And I know that, if I paid for it, I'd be more inclined to listen. And if it was too cheap, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'll just get another one tomorrow. You know, it's just, I just want the people that want to get better. And, yeah, that's about it. I mean, I do, I just like it to be more of a, you know, personal relationship, and not much else.
Yeah, but you also do a lot of free boot camps as well. Did you want to plug those right now?
For the juniors.
Yeah, for the juniors. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. The junior players and. Are really just our future, and I love to help them and do anything I can. The photographer for the Junior International Championships, ran by Rahana, Corey Wolford, Trina Wolford, and so I go to all those JIC tour stops, and I take the photos for everyone and all the junior players, and it's so cool seeing them every year, and I mean every month. They get better every month, and it's just, it makes it all worth it for me, and, you know, doing everything else. And I just got back from a junior clinic that I held at Sandite Billiards. That's in Sand Springs, Oklahoma, a few hours away from Oklahoma City. I just drove down there, and I want to say thank you to Sandy Smith and Michael Smith and everyone that was involved with me doing that, because it was so rewarding for me seeing them get better over the 3 days that we did it. We didn't charge any of the juniors. We gave them lunch. We fed them and all that kind of stuff. So it was really, really rewarding for me. And that's where I get my enjoyment out of pool, is helping, you know, the younger generation. And I wish more pros would step in and take the initiative and grow the sport too.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the big reason why we're on to the podcast today. You have decided to change your last name from Chris Robinson to Chris Reinhold. So take us through the reason why you did it first, and then why you decided right now is the right time for it.
So there's never really a right time to change your name, because, you know, I mean, there's going to be a weird patch no matter what, and that's what I kind of figured. When I was born, my mom's maiden name was Robinson, and my biological dad, who actually got deported when I was, I don't even know, honestly, 4, 5, or 6, he got deported to Mexico. He wasn't exactly the greatest guy, and I haven't seen him since, and I think it's one of the best things that could have happened to my family and I, is because after that, my mom met my stepdad now, which is, I consider, my real dad, and have been for forever, because, you know, he raised me, and he made me the man I am today. And his name's Jared Reinhold, and that was, my mom married him when I was, I'm getting all these ages wrong, but it's anywhere from 6 to 10. So
just make them, no one will question anything.
Yeah. Anyway, they got married, and, you know, he was always my biggest role model, and, he's just a great guy, and my family's lucky that my mom found him. And he legally adopted me when I was 18, so 18 or 19. And so since then, my name has always been Chris Robinson - Reinhold. But I'm going to go through with the official name change to make it just Chris Reinhold and drop the Robinson, because, you know, it means a lot to him. It means a lot to that whole family that raised me. And it means a lot to my mom, and it means a lot to me as well. So, you know, I'm happy to be able to do it. And, hopefully I can create a whole nother, you know, chapter and in my career with this last name.
So I'm not sure how much in depth you want to go with this. Have you spoken with your biological father since he was deported?
I think he's tried, but I just have no interest. Out of respect for, you know, who I think my actual dad is and who raised me, I just have no interest in someone that, you know, wasn't there for me in the formative years. You know, it's just, he's just, I guess, an acquaintance at this point. So I have no reason to expend any energy on him. So I just, it's best if I just don't talk to him.
Gotcha. And did you want to go into the reason as to why he was deported?
It was interesting. I think it wasn't good. So let's just, I think we'll just leave it at that. It wasn't a good situation. It involved alcohol, I believe. And I don't really know exactly the whole 100% story, but it wasn't exactly the best way to go out. Yeah. They attached to him. So it's kind of, not at all. So it's kind of funny, but I don't want to be telling the wrong story, if that makes sense. But yeah, it was something about how, well, cause he's full Mexican and my mom is white. And so I'm actually half Mexican, which is partly why I'm short. and he was, I think he didn't have his papers or something, and then he just never came back. So.
Gotcha. All right.
Legal ramifications. So it wasn't good.
Gotcha. All right. So let's leave that there. And, fun fact, Jared is a listener of the podcast, and I want to say he was a listener of the podcast like all the way back from the absolute beginning. I think I got my very first email from him, and it was very, very early into the podcast, maybe a few months, and he had suggested that he was your stepfather, and that if I was interested, he could try to negotiate with you to get you onto the podcast if I was interested. And, of course I was excited for that and worked out nicely. We got you onto the podcast, and then we even got to hang out with you guys a little bit at the Moscone Cup, 2 years ago, I guess. Yeah. 2 years ago in Vegas. And, I got to sit right next to each other, and I got to meet you all, which was, really nice. So it was actually kind of a small world, right? We get to meet all of each other at the Moscone Cup, and Jared's a listener to the podcast, so everybody gets to hear your story, plus he's going to get to hear it too.
Yeah, he's actually the one that told me about your podcast. I think he listened since the first one. He's a big fan of podcasts, and when he saw one about pool, he gave it a listen, and he really enjoyed it, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and he's given some good criticisms along the way, and some ways to make it better. So I appreciate his being involved in the show, as well as hooking me up with you in the beginning to get you onto the show. So it was a lot of fun. So let's move on to, I guess, the future of your career. Of course, you're starting to look towards the Moscone Cup. I have to feel like everybody is. We are less than 6 months away, and this is kind of when the selection process begins. I know that Shane was already announced as a vice captain, and a playing vice captain, I should say. I think he was the only person announced. I don't think Sky was announced, was he?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either, but I didn't think that was right. But, you know, that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of where the team starts and stops or at least starts in the beginning, is Sky and Shane in whatever order, and it's, you know, the worst kept secret in history. So the last three spots are kind of played for. How are you preparing to, well, let's start this question out here. What is on your radar in the coming months? And we'll start there.
You know, I'm obviously going to try to play in, well, I'm going to play in every event I can. And, Sky got, what is this, the world championships, he got the highest finish in American, so I just assume he'll be picked. And, you know, his track record in the Moscone Cup is, the years that we win is when he's an MVP, so that's saying something right there. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to go to all the big events that there are the rest of the year, and I'm going to go to the Las Vegas Open 10 ball and the World 10 ball, and then hopefully the World 10 ball. I mean, I qualified for it last year, and then everything got shut down, so if they honor the people that got in, then cool, and if they don't, then I guess I won't be playing it, but we'll see. I'll be playing the U.S. Open. I'm playing in every tournament I can. I'm practicing all the time, so... You know, I'm just excited, and you know, if I make it, that's cool, and I'll be ready by December. But you know, if I don't make it, I'll still have the same energy, and I will be rooting for them in December no matter what. So.
And when is the World 10 ball, and usually the World 10 ball and the Diamond Las Vegas, yeah, the Diamond Las Vegas Open is always like the same weekend, right? Or the kind of like the same week back to back.
Yeah, I believe it's in September.
Do you have any idea on dates by chance?
I would have to look it up. Let me see.
I only ask because I'm going to be in Vegas in September as well. And that would be...
Falls over the BCA thing.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that I'll be there for that. So that's pretty cool.
Perfect.
So I will swing out there and say hi. And then I'm actually hopping on a plane right after that to head out to Atlantic City. So... Sounds like fun. I'll be able to see you for a whole week. We're going to be like best friends by the end of it.
Wait, Atlantic City. Is that when the U.S. Open is? September?
Yeah, September 13th, I want to say, is when I would be flying. And September 13th through the 18th, I think, is what the U.S. Open is this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, that's correct, yeah. Yeah. But I'm just figuring out when the other one is, okay.
Yeah, I'm playing the BCAPL Vegas. So that ends, I believe, on the 11th. So I'd probably stay in Vegas for one more day and then hop a flight over to the U.S. Open. The flights are like, the one way out from Vegas to Atlantic City is like $75 from what I saw. So it's like, how can I not take advantage of that and head over and watch a day or two or maybe all of the U.S. Open? Seems like a wasted opportunity if I didn't take it that up. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Plus the marketing and I'd be able to do out there. It just seems like a lot of fun. Plus... You know, what's better than getting to watch world quality pool for, 6 days? So, should be good.
Oh, I agree.
So, which event are you most looking forward to?
Honestly, all of them. I can't really pick, but, you know, hopefully Moscone Cup.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I've had some rough trips over to... overseas lately, but I think it's all part of the process of me getting better, so I think it's for the best.
Well, as I think if you ask most Americans, they would be okay with you going 2 and out or 3 and out or whatever you're doing in the other events as long as you show up for the Moscone Cup. I think that's one we're most excited for as well.
No, I agree, but in order to get the Moscone Cup, I have to do well in the other events, so.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we I can wrap this up at this point in time. I got most of the questions out of the way, but why don't you take a second to talk about your sponsors that have helped you through not only COVID, but to get you where you are in your career right now?
Well, Predator Q's is one of my big sponsors. They help me out with all my equipment and make sure I'm doing well, and you know, they've just done a lot for me, and I can't thank them enough. One of my newer sponsors, obviously, Sticks and Stones Billiards. You know, they give me a place to practice. They give me a place to do lessons. You know, they give me so much support. It's unreal, and they do so much for me. I can't go into details with it, obviously, but you know, they do a lot for me in my pool career and in my personal life, and it's. They've made the transition to Texas really easy and welcoming, and I can't say enough about them. Tyome Billiards, Tyome Tips and Chalk is what I use. They make the best chalk in the world, and you know, one of my favorite tips as well. And I just switched to their Tyome Soft Playing Tip, and it plays amazing. Their break tips are awesome. And I use the Pyro chalk too, and it's awesome because the chalk will last you 6-7 months, you know. And if it doesn't roll in a pocket and roll,
yeah, I was gonna say,
can't get it. Yeah, it lasted me. I've used the same piece of chalk since Moscone Cup. So it's, and I play, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. So it's pretty awesome. And then, you know, Salado app. If a lot of you might not be familiar with Salado yet, but they're going to take over the pool industry. You can get Fargo games in. Just amongst your friends and all that, you can log them in and, you know, make your Fargo a little more accurate. They do a lot for me and they're really supportive and they're just good guys all around. So, you know, hats off to them also.
Reed and Colby have been on the podcast a couple times. They're real good guys. They do a lot for this podcast too.
They're awesome. I actually met them for the first time at the, we did like a little exhibition match with Dan Yelson, Roberto Gomez, and then me, Sky, and Billy played them. I met him there for the first time, and it was pretty awesome. So it's cool that I put a face to the people that support me, and you know I'm trying to do as much for them as they do for me, and you know it's awesome to have the support. Let's see who else. There's Time on the Wire Creative Media. Yeah, just Predator, Sticks and Stones, Salado, Tyome, On the Wire. Yeah, but I'm also open to more sponsors, obviously, and we can just message me. We can work something out if I believe in your product. And, yeah, I mean, thank you to my parents also. My parents are, you know, my two biggest supporters in the whole world, and, you know, they check in on me a lot, and that's good. And my dad, Father's Day is coming up, so... I was hoping to get the name change in before Father's Day because I knew it would mean a lot to him. And yeah, I mean, I have so many supportive people around me. It's hard to thank them all. And it's weird to name names for me because then, you know, some people feel left out, but just know that I have love for y'all and I care for all of you. And, you know, I'm really grateful from where I'm grateful in where I am right now. And it's going through, I'm going through the past few months. It's been kind of rough pool wise and tournament finishings, but I think, I figured it out, mentally. And I think it was just a little mental switch that, I needed to take into consideration. So, thanks everyone for being with me through this journey. And I can't wait to see what happens next.
And I'll offer up, you can be the first ever queued up pro player. I can pay you in patches and t-shirts, really bad t-shirts. How's that sound?
It sounds like I'll sign a 5-year contract.
That's going to take a lot of patches.
Yeah, you gotta make them good patches, come on.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and get caught up with everything. So I thank you very much for joining the podcast again today. And we will be looking for you to have some real deep finishes in the tournaments coming up. And hopefully, just hopefully, we'll be seeing you at the Moscone Cup in London. I will be there in the crowd cheering you on.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I mean, like I said, you know, either way, I'm going to be rooting for USA. If I'm in the jersey or I'm in the jersey on the couch, it's going to be the same energy for me. So I just want the USA to win, and whatever, whoever the captains pick is whoever the captains pick. And, you know, I'll be rooting for everyone.
Yep. Sounds like a great plan, man. All right. Well, I'll let you get out of here then. Thank you again for joining me. Until next time.
Sounds good. See you, Nate.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.